Just like that. And we're rolling.
Boom.
This is Voices from the Dark, everybody. Hello. It's March 10th, 2019. This is episode 35 of the Voices from the Dark podcast. Another installation of the Artists series. Artists number 23. Today I have with me Robert Grant, a writer, filmmaker, and a producer. I think that's correct.
That's correct.
And I'll do the first plug. Twisted Reel. He's the owner of Twisted Reel, I guess, Productions. And yeah, as usual, I will let my guest, Robert, introduce himself. Thank you for being here, first of all.
No, you're absolutely welcome. It's very nice. I've become fascinated with the podcast thing.
So have I.
And yeah, it was the first time I kind of, when you posted something online and I saw it and I thought, well, you know, that might be interesting to do. I've never done one before. I've done radio shows and stuff like that. But this is my first podcast. So thank you very much for having me on.
Great. Podcast virgin. I love it. So yeah, tell us about you.
Is this the who?
Yeah, it's the who. Yeah, I'm trying. So that who? I think I mentioned earlier before we started the show to you. I said that I want to try something more loose. So I've been. First of all, this is episode number 35, and so I've gone through the podcasting like. You know,
and now you're bored of having that conversation. So.
It's not that I'm bored of having it. I think that I'm personally, I feel too rigid when I'm just boxing these questions in. And actually, they're so intertwined.
Mm.
And I've been noticing that in the last few episodes, I've been bouncing back and forth. So now I think to myself, why even put myself in that box?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I thought. I should do a scripted podcast in some way, because this is the artist series is not just it's not the only show on the podcast.
Mm.
It's the most prolific one, but
prolific.
Yeah, it's the one that
I'm
going to
tear it down tonight.
Yeah,
so.
No. You're. I mean, from what our conversation beforehand was, I think this is going to be great.
Mm.
So yeah, I talk sometimes about podcasting because this show is about podcasting as well. But I had the idea of doing like scripted podcasts, and so every time that I did a new episode, I just am getting less and less structured.
It's like playing a night out. If you plan a night out with your friends, it's kind of fun. But when it's spontaneous and it just happens, they're always the best nights. That's when you end up in a boat in Canada. It's 4 o'clock in the morning and you don't know why. You've got your underpants on your head. That kind of thing. And, you know, they're always the funnest ones. I mean, you know, scripting thing. When I saw you asked me to come and do this, I actually listened to some of your podcasts and I actually thought it was slightly too scripted.
Yeah.
So when I came here tonight, you said, let's just chat. I mean, that's what it was all about, I think. I think that's the interesting thing.
Just want to clarify one thing. None of the episodes I've ever produced are scripted. I had the idea to script them.
Right.
And I just, I don't know, I threw it out quite, I made a bunch of recordings.
Right.
And I listened to it and I was like, I can't listen to this. So then I said to myself, and if you listen to episode zero, which is like not even an episode, it's 15 minutes.
Right.
I think I go into that and I say, you know what? This is episode zero and I'm just going to try to be myself.
Yeah. Great.
And so like every episode, I just kind of whittle away at this like rigidness that I feel in myself. And,
sure.
And I feel like my guests are going to benefit.
Of course. It's always nice. I mean, I've done a few interviews in the past, and it's always down to the interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, how relaxed you are. And sometimes it's kind of that when they're sat there with a piece of paper and they're reading off a script or they're reading off of designed questions,
yeah.
It gets a bit, you know, you're like, so what is your artistic influence? And you get asked that 50 times. And as a writer, and it gets a little boring. You're like, come on, just talk to me. Fucking hell. Totally. Am I allowed to swear?
Oh,
on your
podcast? This is it's an explicit...
X-rated.
The podcasting world, like you have to like label it as explicit if you have any, like really any cursing.
Anything.
Any, like just cursing.
Right.
And so anything above that obviously also needs to be rated explicit. So I was like, I'm definitely going explicit.
Right, fair enough. So introduce myself. Okay, yeah. After that slightly long.
No,
this
is, that's what I said. It's like,
okay.
I mean, if you listen to the last one with Tao Tao, I mean, that was, you know.
I did, actually. Yeah. I did. She's an interesting lady.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, she's here tonight.
Yeah, I saw her, yeah.
Ah, by the way, we're in Glogau Air, as I've been in, you know, for the past few weeks doing the podcast here. We're not live, semi-live. None of this is edited.
Great.
So,
So if I embarrass myself, I've got no comeback.
I mean, technically, I offer this. I offer that to my guests. I say, if you want really truly want to edit something that you said, I can do it.
I'm fine.
No problem.
So back to the introduction.
Yeah. Who are you? Robert Grant. Right. That's all we know. And filmmaker, writer.
Well, it's funny. I would always classify myself as a poet. You know, I love poetry. It's my thing. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter what you do and how high you get, you can't make enough money from poetry to pay your mortgage. It's unfortunately one of the only art forms that's not been corrupted by money, and that's what makes it, in my head anyway, really beautiful, because you have to love it to do it. And if someone loves poetry, then they'll do it because they love it, not because they're getting paid really to do it. Because, I've performed at pretty much every festival around the world. I've written 3 books, 2 CDs. I still can't make enough money, which is why I started making music videos.
To kind of
make money. We make music videos and adverts. We do promotional videos for stuff. It happened completely by mistake, though, completely. I had a friend who was a musician, and... he had no money. He was releasing an album. He had no money to make a music video. And he said, well, you've got some experience doing it. Can you make me a video? So I did. And it was one of those things that I had no experience at all. But I knew enough about filmmaking to know that it's not so much... it's the people you have around you. I got the best cinematographer I could afford. I got the best, DOP that I could afford. I got the best lights guy grips that I could afford with the money I had. Even though I was inexperienced, I knew that their experience would take me further. And that was quite successful. It was, for a first effort, it was really, really good. And then from there, we carried on making... I carried on making individual music as an independent artist. Mm. And then a friend of mine who's like a tech guy... he said, well, I always work with independent artists. I find that more interesting than working for the larger ones because, I make my money many different ways. And, when you work with independent artists, you're kind of, the relationship is really great. I've worked with some bigger artists. See, there was no intro, and now I'm just waffling on like an asshole.
No. I'm like totally into the thing.
Right, okay.
I will structure it, I'm like right now, I'm just listening to who you are and but I will definitely, no. I'll just actually interrupt you, basically.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. So,
anyway, yeah, the independent artist thing.
I already have a bunch of questions based on what you said.
That was your first interruption. I like it.
Yeah.
it kind of went from there. And I had a good friend. I'm involved in. I like doing charity work as well. Okay. There's a charity called the Movember Charity where you grow the mustache in November. I'm kind of involved in that in the scene in Berlin. Mm. And every year we put on a variety show where there's poets and musicians and stuff. And because of my connections through both scenes, we can put on a pretty decent show with some pretty good musicians and raise some money. And I was working with he wasn't a friend at the time, but I did this charity event with a guy called Elder Roach, and we just happened to be on the same bill, and I heard him play, and I was like, he's really, really good. Mm. And then he heard me read, because I was reading poetry there, and he was like, God, you're really, really good. And we became friends, and I made a video for him for nothing. It was like €1,000, literally.
So he was a musician and
he was
a
musician, and I was a poet, and I'd made my first music video by then, and this was, I think, my third, something like that. And we made it for no money at all, and then it got nominated for a Cole Award, the Irish Music Prize.
Okay.
And we were actually third place, and everyone above us was Ryan Sheridan and Sinead O'Connor.
Ryan Sheridan, or Sinead O'Connor, obviously.
Yeah, he's a good musician.
Yeah.
And his music videos were fantastic, but the thing that really made me stand out is that we'd made it for €1,000. And when people found that out, they were like, and they'd spent 30 grand.
That's a story right there.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. They spent 30 grand, we spent 1,000. They were like, how the hell did you do that for that little money?
Mm.
And that's really put us on the map. And then from there, my friend came to me and said, I'll do the online stuff. I'll take care of all the marketing. You do the videos. You do the creative side. And then Twisted Reel was formed. And now we've been going for a year, and we've just done our biggest music video yet with a black American rapper. Mm-hmm. He's a phenomenal guy called Black Prez.
Black Prez?
Black Prez. Oh. Have you heard of him?
No.
You will.
I'm also a little bit unplugged from a lot of things. I love hip-hop, but... yeah.
He's fantastic. He's really a lovely guy, and we just finished a video with him, and we're editing now. And so we kind of, you know, we're getting stage by stage higher and higher. So it's that's my intro. I'm also a poet. I will always say that I'm a poet at heart.
Well, we jumped to, like, normally we get to that at the end, but we jumped, like I said, it's totally, I'm trying to do this more loose. That is the most interesting thing to me about probably all artists. Mm. It's like, what is that division between, like, your art and then, like, the way you make money?
It's the thing you can't stop doing. That's your passion. The one thing, I can't stop writing poetry.
Right, but you also can't stop making money and to feed yourself.
No,
balance is
true. It's very true. Very true. I think that as a writer these days, you have to have your, it's like fingers in pies. We have an expression in English. I think you have to. You have to be as versatile to work in many different fields. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, I had, when I was younger, when I first started my career, I really had the romantic notion that I could make it as a professional poet. Until I got to a certain level, I'd released a couple of CDs. I did some festivals and stuff like that.
So when was that? When was the first time that you thought, like, I have to be a poet? Or if it goes further back, when was the first time, looking back, that you thought, like, oh, that's when I was a poet? That's the first time I was a poet.
That's a good question. It's funny. The first, every artist, doesn't matter what genre you're in, you go through a period of going through your influences. You sound or look like your influences, people that you love. And there's a point in every artist's career that hopefully they'll get to. Some people never get there, where you write or you paint something or you make a song that sounds like you, and it can only be you. And I consider that to be the point where I became a writer. Because before that, I'd copied other people. I love Charles Bukowski very, very deeply. And Jack Kerouac and the Beats from 1950. That's my in to poetry.
Beat the grass.
And that's also a compliment to Walt Whitman, because it's the same syllable count as Leaves of Grass.
Oh, okay.
Which is the best. If you haven't never read Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass, just get that book and it will...
I definitely have, but I couldn't recall any... Yeah.
It's a great book. I won't rag on about it, but it's a really great book. But and as I said,
well, we're here to talk about you, not Walt Whitman.
Yeah, Walt Whitman's part of me. I'm glad to say.
Maybe we can raise him from the grave.
It's, you know, every poet that you go through to get yourself into a position where you can write original and interesting poetry, they're a part of you. There's a little bit of Kerouac in me. There's a little bit of, there's a lot of Bukowski in me.
I got a question for you.
Right.
I rarely do this. I have never done this. I'm going to ask you if you know a poet, because you're a poet, and I know a poet. His name is W.D. Snodgrass. Do you know this guy?
No.
Yeah, weird name. Love the name.
Snodgrass.
I've heard the name.
I don't know.
It's an amazing name. And it's W.D. Snodgrass. Yeah, I just read one of his poems called Autumn Inventory.
Right.
I had to memorize it for a poetry class.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it was in an anthology.
Okay.
So anyway, I just figured, since we're talking about dead people, he's a dead
poet. Really funny you say that. I have this kind of rule. I've done so many shows over the years that, and when you do a show, it's really, really sweet. People come up to you and I had this one time, the first time it happened to me, this guy put his hand on my shoulder and said to me, he was like, you really spoke to me. Mm. And I was like, wow, you know, that's really, he was like stoned and, you know, just slightly drunk. And still, I was like, but it was still beautiful. I was like, wow, that's really, really cool. And then we started talking and it happens more and more. And going back to what you actually said, I kind of have a rule now. When someone comes up to me after a show and says that, I'll always say, so who's your favorite poet? And they will always answer me with someone that's dead, right? And I said, so who's your favorite living poet? Mm. And they can never answer me, right? And if they can't answer me, I always turn around and say, well, how into poetry actually are you if you can't name me a poet that's living in your lifetime? Mm. If you're so into it, you would know lots. Mm. And it's kind of my differentia, if that's a word, whether I stand there and want to have a conversation with them or not. It sounds really quite harsh, but, you know.
No, it sounds harsh, but I mean, if that's what you thought to ask them, I think it's totally valid. Anyway, we have to get on to the next section. Now the structure is coming back to my brain. No. Anyway, we can talk about whatever, but actually I lost my train of thought because I jumped into the structure and I was trying to stay out of the structure.
Let's have more wine.
That's a good point.
That's a really good idea.
You are the first guest that asked me for a specific drink, I usually, I always give, bring a drink or get a drink for my guests. And you're the first person that had a request. And I love it. It's well, wine. Rioja.
I love Rioja.
I mean,
red wine in general, but Rioja
yes,
especially.
Yes, me too. Red wine in general. So yeah, I just wanted to ask you, yeah, more about here. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Thanks for the great idea to bring a bottle of wine.
It's always a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, I think we've heard a lot about you and about. I think you've given us a lot of, things to think about who you are as an artist. Mm. So, yeah, let's get to that. So speaking of like living poets, and I mean you're a living poet. So like what do you want to tell us about what you do? Like tell us about what you write. What's in it? Like just get into it.
Right. What I actually do. What I write about. I mean, what I write about is the poets that I've always loved are poets that try to simplify language. I really, really hate poets that overcomplicate things just to make themselves sound cool or to make themselves sound intelligent. I don't understand why they're trying to do that. Mm. For me, I try and take fairly difficult philosophical standpoints, maybe, and not dumb them down, but make them very, very digestible for a very large amount of people. Because I think that's important. If I'm not trying to do that, then I don't know what I'm trying to do. Mm. You know, I remember once I had a show, a very big show at the Haus und die Kultur in Die Welt, and we went out for a drink with all the poets afterwards.
Here in Berlin.
Here in Berlin, down it's like an opera house down by the water.
What's the German way of saying Haus des Kulturen in
Die Welt? Die Welt. And we went out afterwards, and one of the poets, I already had my hackles up because he was wearing a crushed velvet purple jacket, right, like a suit jacket. And my heckles were already up because I'm kind of like a jeans and a T-shirt kind of guy. And I was kind of like, okay. And then we all sat around afterwards, very well-known poets. There was me and there was a guy called Scott McCaskill, MC Jabber. He's one of the best poets I've ever heard. And a guy called Ben Porter Lewis, also a fantastic poet.
Also based in Berlin? Or?
Well, Ben is actually in New York. He's from Ithaca. Okay. And he's a great poet. He's the best. His ability to deliver his work live is, there's no one even close to him. And MC Jabber too, he's got this way of, this really quick but very precise way of speaking, which is very difficult to do. And we all sat around the table having this really quite interesting conversation. This guy turns around, opens up his jacket like this, and he pulls out his own book from his inside pocket and sits there and starts reading it to the table with five other professional poets. Okay. And it's that kind of poet that I just go...
This is the purple jacket.
The purple jacket guy. And I was like, what the fuck? Why are you doing that now? We're just going to get drunk and talk about tits. Why are you fucking doing that? Do you know what I mean? It really annoyed me. I was like, you pretentious dick. Mm. Stop it. And that's, unfortunately, I think that, poetry has that kind of rap. You know, people think that it's not more popular because people think they can't get into it. Mm. Because they think they're going to be made to feel stupid. And I really try and say, that's not the case. You know what I mean? I'm just a regular guy. I've got a kid. You know, I like to drink. I like watching baseball. You know what I mean? I'm just a regular guy, but I also write poetry. Okay. You know, and that for me is the important thing. Bukowski said it best. He said that this is the table, that's the floor, anything else is just bullshit. And I was like, okay, you know, he's like, I've got no time for metaphor. That's, and I think that people try and overcomplicate something that really should be simple and beautiful. Yeah. Because poetry, the most simple and the more beautiful it is, the more people that can feel that simplicity and beauty of you explaining something very complicated in such a beautiful, precise way, then if they're listening to someone taking a subject that's, they're talking about love and they overcomplicate it to a point where you don't understand what they're talking about anymore, then for me, it just, you got me talking about poetry now whilst drinking wine, so it might talk your ears off.
Oh, that's perfect. So then, who is your, in your mind, like, who's your audience? And also, like, who's, like, are you writing for the audience, or are you writing for yourself, or is there, like, do you have like this imaginary audience in your mind, or do you like? What's your relationship to
it's
the
really
other
funny.
Side?
I've had a weird relationship with audiences. I've had I tell you a story. My audience that I'm trying to write to is just people that want to listen to my stuff. Mm. I've got really great fans, really really good fans that treat me really really well. And but the problem on the flip side is there's a lot of people that are into poetry for the wrong reasons. And I remember when I did a show, I forget where it was, but I was about to read this poem about, you know, the kind of banal, sterile people that usually would come to this kind of show. And I stood on stage, and there were about 100 and odd people there, and the entire front row were the people I was about to talk about. And I was like, I just can't fucking do this. I just, you know, it made me feel really, really uncomfortable. So, I mean, I stopped performing a while back because I had some, you know, some strange things. When I first started doing shows in Berlin, there was a woman, and the first show I did, she came up to me after the show and she just started screaming at me for no real reason. Just, you can't say that, you can't do that. And I was like, listen, if I offended you, then please don't come back next month. All right, just don't come back. But next month rolled around, and she came back.
Oh, wow.
Right? And then she screamed at me again after the show. And this happened every single month. And then about the fourth, fifth month this happened, I came off stage. I was like, right, she's going to start fucking screaming at me. And I looked in her eyes, and I could see that she was getting off on screaming at me. And that was her buzz. That kind of thing. Audiences are very, very strange. I mean...
You have a complicated relationship with... I mean, that sounds very complicated right there.
It's really complicated. And when I saw that in her eyes, I was like, she was getting off on screaming at me, even though what she was saying was completely ridiculous. But she was enjoying that. And every month I'd been going, don't come back. And she'd come back and scream at me. And it's just... It's one of those things. Audiences are... If you get a good audience, it's like stand-up comedy. If you get a good audience and they're with you and they're on your side, I mean, you know, performing poetry is difficult enough, and people don't realize how hard it is to speak that quickly and that precisely without making any mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, from memory, usually a good poet will have their poems memorized and read them, you know, aloud.
Mm.
And to be able to do that and then do it well and with flair, it's a difficult thing. And they just sit there and they talk. You know, and you, they're right in front, like you are now, just bah, 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 to their friend. Oh, I've got a message from Jimmy. And you're just like, woman, shut the fuck up. I'm trying to perform poetry here, or man, or whatever it is. It's just, audiences are funny. I mean, poetry for some people is like a drug. You know what I mean? And when you get someone that's in front of them giving them their fix, they get a bit, you know.
High.
They get high on what you're saying, and then they get carried away. And
I got to ask, what was the... poem, if you know which poem, maybe she mentioned it, or that she was freaking out about. You don't have to answer that question.
No, I will. I have a poem that's called, I don't know whether I should mention, I won't mention it by name. How's that? I have a poem.
That's fine.
I'll tell you
that's
the structure of the poem.
That's
what
fine.
I do is I say, one of the lines in the poem I'll give you, she was a real son of a, and the whole point of the poem is I never say the last word. So it could be the son of a shoe cleaner. It could be the son of a dust sweeper. But they say bitch. You said bitch.
Really?
They say bitch. And she came up to me after the show. You can't call women bitches. I was like, I didn't say that.
Oh, my God.
And it was in her head. And that's why, for me, I found it really, really frustrating. It was really, really weird.
Wow.
And it got to the point where I would do a disclaimer before I'd read the poem.
Mm.
And I would tell a story about when I literally got accosted. I came off stage and these two women came up to me like really were quite violent.
This is another different show.
Yeah,
no,
and my friend
wasn't
to,
this woman. This
no, this is a different woman.
Okay,
different two women.
Two women.
My friend like had to get in the middle of us and say no, he didn't say it. It's ridiculous. You need to listen to what he's saying. You know what I mean? Because it could be anything. It could be the son of a road sweeper. It could be the son of a doctor.
Yeah,
but they say bitch as you did. And that's the point of the poem.
I didn't say it.
No, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I thought it, of course.
That's what I mean. That's the whole point of the poem is I'm trying to lead them there.
Yeah.
And they were so silly. And I did a disclaimer. I said, look, last time I did this, two women came up to me after the show and started screaming and shouting at me. And then I did the poem. And then after I came off stage, two women came up to me and started screaming and shouting at me.
Jeez.
And I was like, this is too surreal. This is too repeating. This is too cyclical for me to continue doing this.
Yeah.
I also had a...
all these experiences, these like negative experiences, they stopped you from
performing. I had another thing happen. I had a bit of a stalky thing.
I'm sorry to hear that.
No, I do some shows here and there. When I launched the book Beats and Grass, Beat the Grass, I did a show at the Bar Babu. It's a jazz bar in Friedrichshain.
Oh.
And it's a great jazz bar. It's one of those dirty, smoky with the small tables and the small lights. It's like a proper jazz bar.
Mm.
And I went in there to see a concert one night, and I fell in love with the place. And when I launched the book,
what's it called?
It's called Bar Babu. I can't. Bubba. I can't. They always have the guy that runs the music there is a phenomenal guy, okay. Dan, and he's got a good taste in music. Mm. You know, so every night there's a good band. And when I saw the place, I wanted to launch the book there, and then we went back and did it there. And that performance was actually really nice. I really enjoyed it because it was my fans and they were in the audience. And if it wasn't my fans, I have some quite well-known musician friends working in music videos. So I invited like these Danish guys from a band called Cryo Shell, who are very, very big in Denmark and Japan.
Interesting name.
Yeah, and I brought them down to Berlin and they did a show. And it was really nice that the audience didn't really know who they were, but the minute they started playing, they were like, shit, they're pretty good.
Is it metal? No.
No, metal. Cryo Shell is metal. They do like manga films.
Okay.
They do the soundtracks for manga soundtracks. Mm. The first time, I didn't know this, and then I saw I went to his studio, the guy called, his name's Casper Sunderland. And I went to his studio, and there was a poster on the wall. And it was a great poster. It was like a really cheesy poster. And I looked at the poster, and I saw it was him. And he's like stood in the middle of the thing with the fingerless leather gloves on, doing like a power fist for the Japanese market. And I was like, how cool is that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think that's like, it's like a metal thing. It's like something you might have seen in the Pick of Destiny or something. I don't know if
Pick
you know.
Pick of Destiny.
The
What's
Pick
that?
Of Destiny. Oh, What's my that? God. Best metal
Educate
movie,
me, please.
Best metal movie that you can ever watch.
Has it got Jack Black in it?
Yes, it does.
No, it does not.
It totally does. 100%.
That guy's metal. He's like a metal
Unbelievable.
Actor.
Unbelievable.
Is that the Tenacious D thing?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay, I know Tenacious D.
Tenacious D in the Pick of Destiny.
Basically,
let's talk a little bit about... Well, first of all, we don't know where you're from, or at least I don't. Did you say you're...
I didn't.
You
no.
didn't.
Yeah. I'm kind of... I grew up in England. My family is Scottish. My father's Scottish, my mother's English. But I grew up... my father was in the forces, and I grew up overseas. I lived in Germany until I was 5. And then I moved to Cyprus in the Mediterranean Sea, and then moved back to England. I went to school there and stayed there until I was...
You know Michael Bisping?
Of course, the fighter.
Yeah,
man, he's a good fighter.
I'm glad I mentioned that.
Do you like fight?
I was like, should I mention Michael Bisping?
I like fighting. I've got to be honest,
so
UFC
I.
very very much.
I just started in February.
Jiu-jitsu.
Yep.
You do jiu-jitsu
over
really?
Here? Yeah, right here.
Where do you do it?
In Fenris.
I'd love to do it. It looks awesome,
dude.
Is it really good?
It's changed my life. I've only done it for a month or so.
Right.
Changed my life 100%.
Really? Yep. In what way? Discipline?
Oof. I mean, discipline, no. I have a pretty good measure of discipline, but it's more like, I guess I should say, it's not changed my life. It's provided something that's been missing in my life.
Right, nice.
And which that is being this like, it's like going to church on Sunday.
Right.
This is my church. You know
okay,
what I mean?
Okay, okay.
So I'm an atheist, so I don't go to church.
Me too.
And so, anyway, but this podcast is not about me. But
see,
so
I had to
bring in
Boom.
Michael. You said Cyprus. I was like, should I bring up Michael Bisping? And
yeah.
Look at that. You know
and
who he is.
My father, you know, as I said, Army, let me finish that story then.
Because he was also there. He's from there.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
because of the Army and all
yeah.
that stuff.
Yeah. I'm exactly the same. I am Michael Bisping. Did you not know?
I almost spit out my wine.
You are that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to make you spit it all over your equipment.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying. No, and then I moved back to England when I was 14. I lived in a place called Hythe, which is near the city of Southampton on the south coast. And then I lived there through until I was... I worked there a bit. My parents live... Oh, my mother lives there. And then I moved to Southampton. I moved away. I lived in America for a bit. I lived in Mexico.
In
and
Denver.
Then I came here. No, I didn't live in Denver. I was there for business.
Where'd you live?
I was in Los Angeles, Miami,
nice.
New York.
Oh, Miami, I love. LA.
Do you really love it? I hate it, man.
I love the freaky weather. Obviously, hurricanes and shit like that, no. But just the little bit that I've seen of it, just obviously the Cuban influence and the Latin thing going on down there.
No, I like Denver. Like we said before, we did the podcast. I was flying out of Denver. I did this thing on the. There's a book by Jack Kerouac called On the Road.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. And my publisher sent me to America and Mexico to retrace the steps taken that he took on the 50th anniversary of the first publishing of On the Road. And I went there as a modern day beat poet and followed his steps as close as I could in the book and had as many experiences as he had. going through Mexico and America. And I ended up in Denver. I went all the way through the Mexican part of his book and then ended up in Denver, which is where he spent a lot of time. And I was there and I had no money. I'd completely run out of money and I was broke. And this is why Denver endears itself to me. I was in
Of course, yeah. Denver, he is from Denver.
Yeah, I mean, he...
sort of.
But the story is actually I was there with no money, me personally, to me. And I was in this diner, the only 24-hour diner, and I had no money. And I started talking to these guys that worked in, I think it was like real estate or something like that, businessmen. And I had just about enough money to cover my tab, the amount of food I'd had. So we sat and we ate and we chat. And then they left because they had to go to work the next day. And they paid my check whilst leaving. And I was like, and I never saw them. I don't even know what their names are. And it's just one of those things that you do for another human. You're just like, man, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they paid for my check. So I had a bit more money to, you know, stay there the rest of the night and then catch my plane back from there back to England. But yeah, so Denver, I adhere myself to it. I do like it.
All right. And so how long have you been in Berlin?
12 years now.
Wow. 12 years.
I came, as I said, I was in Mexico doing this thing and I met my wife there. She was just traveling and doing Mexico and Central and South America. And then she carried on traveling. I moved back to England because I had
I know it's not about your wife, it's about you, but was she down there for any particular reason?
No, just traveling.
Okay.
Yeah, she's a businesswoman. She used to work for Master Foods,
yep.
And she was quite high up in the company and then got a bit fed up with it.
Mm.
You know, she was making a lot of money but working a lot of hours, yeah. And she decided if she didn't do it now, she would never do it.
Mm.
And I had a similar mentality, and we met there, and after, you know, courting, I'm so old-fashioned, she said, do you want to move to to Berlin? And I said, well, you know, why the hell not? So I came here, and I fell in love the moment I got to the city.
It's hard not to.
It really is. It really is. It's a very, very interesting place. When I moved, how long have you been here?
Since 2013.
Oh, I've been here since 2007? Seven, something like that.
I just realized that I got married in 2013 and also moved to Berlin in 2013.
Is that, to a German woman? Or?
Is that correct?
Did you marry a German woman?
No, I married an Argentine woman.
Okay.
Yeah. And it must be correct.
Right.
It's got to be.
Let's hope.
I hope so. Cheers. Oh, well, you got a sip in there. We can do a little cheers. Cheers.
Yeah, but Berlin since I've been here.
So we can do a break. Can do a break if you want.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yep. And we can come back and talk a little bit more about.
So here's to your sponsors. Adderall.
Adderall.
If your kid is a bit crazy, give them Adderall.
Can I get sponsorship from them?
We'll try.
I mean, if you can give me any tips on that, you know, sponsors and
sponsors.
And so
okay, Twisted Reel, the best.
we can come back and talk about, you know, your relationship to Berlin and also other locations.
Let's do that.
Time, space, and
we're going to edit this out, right?
No.
Oh shit!
Nothing gets edited.
Damn it!
Okay, come back. See you later. So, yeah, we're rolling.
Okay.
All right. We took a little
straight
break.
Straight back in
without a doubt. So, basically, let's talk about, you know, time, space, location, you know, quadratic equations.
Boom, we're in. I can do it. String theory. Let's go.
String theory. All right. So, yeah. You mentioned, can you maybe just break down a little bit more of where, you know, you've been in the planet, basically.
Like on the planet, where have I been?
Space-wise, yeah.
I've been quite a few places, actually. My wife, you know, as I said, she has a love of traveling. And when we got together, she just wanted... There were so many... She kind of was going all around the world. And I kind of broke that up. And when we got together, I didn't want to for her not to complete what she wanted to do. So she kind of came up with the country she wanted to go to, and then we went and spent a significant amount of time in there. So we went to Japan, we went to Vietnam, we went to... where else did we go? South America, Brazil, which was really nice. But Japan is my thing. So I've kind of been around the world. I traveled quite a bit. I've been to places I wanted to go. Mexico is my favorite place. I fell in love. I was there for 3 months writing that book that I told you about. Called Much More Than Mexico. No, My first book was called Much More Than Mexico. Yeah, it was serialized in a Dutch poetry journal kind of thing. So they every month they would, you know what serialized means.
Yeah,
That was Yeah, and that was fantastic, but I love it. I mean, I would be there now. Me and my wife have a plan to retire to Mexico. We have a house picked out. I was staying in a place called Puerto Escondido, and if you haven't been there, it's the
Mexico.
Most
That's
in Mexico.
Like the West Coast? No.
It's right down south, actually, kind of. It's about an hour away from Acapulco. Mm.
So what for, like, in terms of being an artist, like, or a writer, or, you know, do you consider yourself an artist?
I don't know whether, for me, an artist is someone that paints.
Okay.
I'm a writer.
Okay.
I always consider myself that.
That's a sort of very classical idea.
In what way?
I don't know. To me, I feel like, yeah, it's like a sort of anterior, posterior, no. You know, basically, I think a lot of people today think of art and artists, it's not just about painting and paintings.
No, I can understand the terminology, but yeah. I would always, if someone asked me, I would never say I was a writer.
Right.
I would never say I was an artist.
Right,
sorry, right. I would say I was a writer.
Right.
You know, or a
actually,
poet.
I agree with that. But I still would consider a writer to be an artist. It's interesting.
It's like within filmmaking. If you know, a director, I don't think is an artist. Mm. I would say that the cinematographer is an artist.
Oh wow!
The DOP is an artist. The director is a manager of.
Tell that to Quentin Tarantino.
Well, no. I think there's a certain amount of artistry that goes into it. The way you design your shots is definitely artistic, and you can make them look very, very beautiful. I don't mean that they're not artists in that kind of broad sense, but a director. I mean, when I direct films, my job is to make sure that I've got the right people in the right place. So I've got the best DOP. A cameraman that I can afford, you know what I mean, for my budget. I've got the best cinematographer that I can afford, and then my job is to manage them and to make sure that they do their job to the level that I know that they can do their job. Mm. You know what I mean? And I have to trust them that they know more about that fucking camera than me, and this guy knows more about the lights than me.
Okay.
So, you know, I let them do their job, and as long as they're doing their job, then I don't really need to do too much as a director. I can concentrate on the artistic.
It's the secrets of the directors. Actually, it's true. I think that a lot of people might be surprised that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's possibly a very deep topic.
What, directing films?
Yeah.
It's.
I don't think we can. So let's just go back to like the. So as an artist or a writer.
Okay.
You know, just to get back to that before we had the tangent. Yeah, what's your relationship to location? Is it important, like, for your life, for your artistic life?
It's really not. I mean, I love Berlin, like I said, but I've always written. When I was in Mexico, I wrote a lot. When I was in England, I wrote. It's not where I am. It's got nothing to do with my position on the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a writer. I write what I see. You know, what's happening to me at that point, I'll write about that. It doesn't matter where I'm actually from. I mean, I can understand if I've written a lot about Berlin. I love this city, and I love to. There's certain places in the city I like to go. You know, when I go out, there's a routine. There's a bar I always go to at the end of the night, and I'm the cliche. I sit at the end of the bar and I write. You know, when I'm hammered at 3 o'clock in the morning and I really should be going home, I sit there and I write, and it's lovely.
But it's a real thing, you know. This maybe is also a cliche, but it's a real
cliches
thing.
Are only cliches because they're true. That's the only reason they become cliches. You know, statements that are actually true when you think about them, they become cliches. Do you not agree?
Shit. I don't
disagree.
Know.
Go on, disagree with me. Go on.
I don't think we have time on the podcast for that, but it is a very interesting idea. So and even more interesting is that, you know, you for you location is not important. It's more, you know.
For me, I mean, I can understand writing. I mean, I've written a lot about Berlin and things that have happened to me in Berlin. And I find that the most interesting things happened to me in Berlin. You know, when I came here, my career was really nowhere. I released an album called The Rambling Man. And it did fairly well
poetry album.
It wasn't really poetry. I actually worked with a guy that was a DJ for Head Candy. It's an English DJ consortium of 10 DJs good, and they go and do club nights like Cream or something like that. They take over a club and they're the 10 DJs that perform. Yeah. It's very popular in England.
I don't know too. So I'm the wrong person to talk about that, like DJs and stuff.
Anyway,
I don't know anything about it.
Okay, so. I'll tell you the story.
Yeah, the story, I'm sure, is...
This girl, called, I won't say her name, she was my weed dealer at the time. And I met her boyfriend one night, and we started talking. He's like, what's your name? I said, my name's Rob. He's like, my name's Rob. I went, what's your last name? And he kind of looked like me. Same build, same general size. I'm a big guy.
Am I talking to him right now?
But no, hang on. And I said to him, what's your last name? And he went, Grant. And I went, fuck off. I was like, your name's Robert Grant? I was like, yeah. And he was my dealer's boyfriend at the time. And we became really good friends. And I found out subsequently that he was this big-time DJ. And so we did an album where he did the music. And I, like, did poetry over the top of the music. And it did quite well. You know, we did all right. Mm. And I thought I was the shit. I thought I was, like, the big balls, and I'd been published, and I was the man. But that's when it starts. That's when you have to work twice as hard as you have ever worked before in your life. Because, you know, the first thing, if it comes out and it does well, you've got to follow that shit up. You know what I mean? You can't just sit back and go, I didn't make enough money to sit back and just, like, you know, buy a car. And, you know, I had enough money to cover my rent. I had enough money to buy food, finally, from writing. And that was the first time it really hit. See, now I've gone off on a tangent, and you have to bring me back, Mr. Presenter.
I'm trying. But yeah.
Looks like you're trying to hold on to the chair.
Yes, true. Oh, well, yeah, I'm, like, leaning into the chair.
But that was the first time I really got published. I don't know what the original question was, but hey.
Yeah, it was something about the relationship to location. But it was definitely a tangent.
It was a tangent. It definitely was. Yeah. Let's try and bring it back.
Yeah, we can bring it back. But I think where we should bring it is to base. Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit. It's, you know, why?
Why?
Why do you do any of it? As the, you know,
why do I write poetry? I can't stop writing poetry. If I did, my wife sees it in me. If it's been two or three days and I haven't written anything, I get a bit twitchy and a bit pissed off and a bit like, and I do this thing when I kind of stare in the middle distance. She's talking to me and it really annoys her. I'm staring over her shoulder, just like, she was like, go and write, for Christ's sake, go and write. And I go, always write poetry. You know, and I love it. I always get back to it. It's the thing I can't stop doing. But why do I do it? Because, yeah, that's it. Because I can't stop it. You know what I mean? I write about experiences, and I can't stop living. I can't stop moving forward. I can't stop being me. You know what I mean? And whether I'm in a mood where I like myself or whether I'm in a mood where I hate myself, there's something to be said about both. Mm. You know, when I'm, you know, having trouble with certain things, or I'm drinking too much, or I'm not sleeping enough, or I'm being an asshole, there's something to be said about that. Also, when I'm being sweet and I'm being with my daughter and I'm having a great time in the bath, and I write about that too. You know, in this book that I just wrote, Beat the Grass, there's so many things of that. I tried to write about my daughter for so long, and every time I would start writing a poem about it, it would be beautiful but slightly not actually connected to my relationship to my daughter. So I would go off on these beautiful romantic tangents like we have been doing. But it wasn't really connected to my relationship with her. And then I sat down one day and I thought, well, I'm just going to write an honest thing. And it was a poem about her being in the bath. And she put the bubbles on the back of my head and she went, here you go, Daddy, you've got new hair. And I was just like, that's the most honest fucking thing in the world. And that really happened, you know what I mean? That's the beauty of being a father. You're a father, right?
Yeah.
And it's these little tiny things that you don't realize are so relevant. And you see them and they're so beautiful. So for me, it's not where I am. That's what we were talking about. Relevant to where you are in the world. It's not where I am. It's what's happening right in front of me. I see the world as I see it. And sometimes, as a writer or an artist, whatever you want to see it, people look at the world like, they look at it straight on. Right, you have to look at me for this. It's like a head thing. They look at it straight on. They look at the world like this. And I think that it's my job as an artist just to tilt my head slightly to the left or the right and go, hang on, it could also look like this.
That is a very good visual.
So I could have
visualized that without looking at you.
Right, but most people, you know what I mean. Good, you know what I mean. Good. Most people just see it like this, 100%. If I can make them see it like that, if they read some of my poetry or they see one of my films and it makes them go, ah, then that's what I'm meant to do. That's what it's there for. It's to make. I mean, I always had a problem with. It was quite recently. It was a couple of years ago. I thought that what I was doing was stupid. And I didn't know why I was doing it.
In terms of writing or video, multimedia?
A little bit of everything.
Directing.
A little bit of everything. It was more to do with the film directing. I didn't really know what I was doing. It was a little bit silly. And a friend of mine, who is also a filmmaker, he turned around to me and he said, well, when these people, they go to work every day and they work so hard and they're collecting trash, or they're sweeping the streets, or they're a nurse in a funeral home, and they've had a fucking shit day, and their lovely friend has died, and then they go home, and all they want to do is sit down, turn on the television, and be entertained, and that's your job. That's my job. You know what I mean? You know, I'm there to entertain them. You know, they pick up a book of mine, and they read something, and they like it, and they get something from it. Mm. And they've had a shit day, and I make them smile. Or they see one of my music videos, and they go, that's pretty cool. You know what I mean?
That goes into the whole audience thing, yeah. So yeah. Actually, yeah, you said you had a complicated relationship with your audience, but also, I mean, you also have somewhat, yeah, it's an emotional, passionate, I think... Yeah, man, being loose with these questions is way better. Because then
I agree.
You see, there's no pressure on like.
I don't have a difficult relationship with my audience. I had a complicated.
Got it right there.
You got it written down.
Got it down.
I had a complicated journey to find my audience.
Okay.
You know, I started off at open mics, literally it was like there was when you go to an open mic, it's normally there are 8 comedians, there's 1 musician, and I was the poet. And I started off doing that, and it's fucking hard to stand up there and do that shit in front of people. And when I released the album that I was talking about, we did a show to release the album, and it was the first time I'd ever read aloud into a live audience was there to hear just me. And I was 30 at the time, I think.
Wow.
So it was a while back. And I stood on the stage, and I looked out at the audience, and I was so fucking scared I couldn't open my eyes. And my eyes were just slammed shut the whole, and I read the whole thing with my eyes closed, and to the point where people in the audience were going, "Open your fucking eyes!" like shouting at me, and I couldn't do it because I couldn't look at them. I was so scared. And then from there, that's my first experience of an audience just there to see me. And then over the years, you know, I'm so happy that people. I'm really happy that some people really fucking hate my stuff. Because when they come up to you and talk to you after a show and you realize the kind of people they are, I think to myself, I'm really glad you hate my stuff. Because you're a fucking asshole. And if you liked my stuff and you understood my stuff, that makes you me a bit of an asshole. I mean, I am an asshole, but if I'm your asshole, then it's, you know, it's fine.
It's the battle of assholes.
It's the battle of assholes coming to HBC.
HBC.
HBC? No. I thought it was an American
NBC.
Music.
NBC. Yeah.
NBC. Sorry.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I think it's NBC.
Tangents. We're HBC just tangents everywhere tonight.
No, that's fine. So, yeah. I think within all that, there's definitely some kind of, I would have to say advice or wisdom is even a better word. There must be some kind of wisdom that not only artists, you know, everybody who has ever listened to this show knows that I always ask this, and I say this is the most important question. So that structure part can't really leave. I mean, it's like sort of like the point of the show, everybody, as you know, because I've said it so many times, is, you know, how I think there's a lot of advice already in there. So I guess what would be, you know, it doesn't have to be something you've already said. Could be anything off the top of your head.
What would be the biggest?
What would be, like, the most, the biggest piece of advice?
That I could give to someone that wants to write?
Yeah, or
make
do
film.
Anything artistic, like, in that definition that we kind of talked about.
Finish things. Mm. Finish things. If you start something, finish it. I mean, whether it's shit or not, whether you don't like the poem, finish the fucking thing. All right, you can get to the end of the poem, and when you've written it, you reread it to yourself, and you think that's crap. Then that's fine. Then you're one poem closer to writing something great. Clear the chamber, get it out of your head. When you're filmmaking, if you have an idea that you think is crap, do it though. Make the film. Do these things. I've learned so much more by making mistakes. Through filmmaking especially, so many mistakes. The first film I ever made was not the first music video, that I then from that music video tried to make a film called The Meaning of Mr. Watson. And it was a really interesting title, at least, and it was a really interesting film about someone trying to find their place in the world. And I thought I'd nailed it, and I was a great director. And then we made the film, we got to the edit, and I had made so many mistakes. And it really showed me that I didn't really... I had to learn that shit.
How did you learn it, though?
By doing it. I then realized... That was a 15, 17-minute short, I think, with everything, with sound, with light, camera, everything. And then I realized that I wasn't a strong enough director to actually pull that off. So I had to learn how to direct. So that's why I went back to music videos. So I went back to learn how to actually do these things, to work with sound and to learn more and become a better director. So that when I get into the position now, which I'm in, which is the fact that I've written a full script and it's now going into production, I hope. It's a very complicated process, but we're getting there. And I always wanted to make a full-length feature film. You know, the first time when I was a kid, I watched Die Hard. Right. This is all connected to the advice.
Bruce Willis, yeah. Okay.
I watched Die Hard, and it's a genre-changing film. And then I watched Leon, the Professional, Luc Besson. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great shots, beautiful film. And I wanted to make films.
My son's name, by the way, is Leon.
Is your Leon, really? Yeah. Oh, that's a nice name. Yeah. That's really funny. I was going to call if my daughter was a boy, I would have called her Leon. And you know what I mean? Yeah.
Really?
And now it's a girl, I called her Ruby. Mm. It's a nice name. Yeah. It's a beautiful name. Anyway, and then when I started making films, I thought it was very simple, and I kept making these mistakes. And every time you make a mistake, you go, right, I'm not going to fucking do that again. And it sounds like a cliche, like we were talking about earlier on, but you make that connection. You're like, right, I messed up on the sound that time. Like, that take was a little bit too short.
See, but
that
I wouldn't
was
call that a
long.
Cliche. That's just a sort of a common truth or a truth. I mean, it's
a common truth. Yeah, okay, truth. That's a nice way of putting it.
It might not be universally true, but.
But it's the same as when you write anything. You know, you can read a... When you first start writing, if you haven't written for a while and then you start writing, the first two or three things you write are going to be shit. You're clearing the chamber. It's like masturbation. You're getting that shit out of your head so that then the good stuff can come through. You know what I mean? It's like a blockage. It's like a blockage. I hope you know what I mean.
Yeah, blockage, yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you get it out. You know, the first couple of poems are really bad, and you read them and you're like, oh, I'm just talking about the same shit I talked about, you know, before many, many times, or in the same style that I've already done. But the third poem or the fourth poem, there's something more beautiful. So, you know, write, do it, make it, finish it. Do what you're doing. Yeah. If you say you're going to do something, don't get halfway through it and then go, finish that shit. If it's bad or if it's good, if it's bad, you'll learn from it. If it's good, fucking awesome. Either way, it's good. Finish what you're doing. That's all I would say. So there you go.
It's good wisdom.
And masturbate. So both. Yeah. Clear the chamber. Rob's advice for the night.
Alrighty. Yeah. That's good advice. So.
How are we doing for time? How are we doing for time?
I think we're good for time, so yeah, we can probably talk about one more thing I was thinking about.
Okay.
So we talked about what you do, but what about current projects? Is there anything you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, that's thank you for saying that. That's really cool.
I mean, that's also one of the main things of this show. I try to always give guests an opportunity to, you know, basically
I'm actually
talk about their current shit.
I'm actually curating a cultural festival, my first cultural festival. I also organize events. That's another thing that I do. I did a poetry show for 6 years called Beat Street that got really big, and then the Poetic Groove, I shut that one down and then started the Poetic Groove, which is still going now but under different management. I gave it to other people because I wanted to stop doing it, but I love to organize shows. And I just got asked by there's a website in Berlin called indieberlin.de, and if you know them, you should go there. If you're an independent artist, go and check out the website, because they really help independent artists in Berlin to get themselves more noticed.
This is your website? No,
no, it's not mine. It's a friend of mine. He's the chief editor, a guy called Noel. He's amazing.
Okay.
And with him, he's in conjunction with
me.
What
is it called?
It's called indieberlin.de. I love the fact that you're actually writing this down. I hope your listeners do too. Because they're just amazing. They really, really support independent art in Berlin in every form.
indieberlin.de.
Yeah, they're amazing. Anyway, we've got together. He's kind of a friend. He was a fan of a film that I made. Because we worked, we had one of his friends is an artist called Cameron Lang, who's a very good guy, and he did the music from one of my films. And Noel is friends with Cameron, and that's how we met. Mm. And now we're doing this festival, this Words Festival. We're still working on the name. We're thinking about calling it WordFest 2019. What do you
not
think?
Not bad.
WordFest Berlin.
Not bad.
It's not bad. But it's on the.
I like it.
Is it the
actually, yeah, I like that.
WordFest. I think that's quite cool. It's at the Forum Factory on the 4th of May this year, and it's basically a whole day.
Wow.
And it's funny, I was actually going to ask you if you wanted to come along and do a live podcast from it. I've actually written it here, if you don't believe me. It's written right here, look.
Yeah.
So podcast from the festival. You could broadcast from there. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't actually broadcast. I broadcast with Radio Banda Larga, but I do broadcast on iTunes.
Okay, but you could do a podcast there. That would be fun. I thought it would be nice to have a podcast there, someone live talking to the artists and doing our stuff. Mm. It could be interesting for you. It could be a good thing for your channel.
It's 100% interesting for
fantastic.
Me.
Fantastic. As I said, we're doing the Forum Factory.
That's a great opportunity.
It's an all-day event. Let me just blab on about and plug that a little tiny. It's an all-day event that's celebrating anything to do with writing in Berlin. So we've got comics, we've got graphic novels, we've got poetry, we've got novelists, we've got, like, in the day, we've got, like, a stage talk with five prominent writers in Berlin talking about how to get published and how to help other people get published. And then we've got a talk from the guy that runs Indie Berlin. He's going to come up and talk about independent art in Berlin. And in the night, we've got burlesque. I love burlesque. Burlesque dancing, to me, I think it's awesome. So we've got beat poetry, burlesque, music. So it's more of an adult event. It's going to be very cool. We're going all day and all night. It's going to be awesome. So come.
And the name again?
It's called WordFest.
So you already chose? You already decided?
I don't know. What do you think? Oh, okay. WordFest is a good word? WordFest. Definitely, I think it's great. Definitely. It was either WordFest or WriterFest, but I think WordFest is really cool. WordFest 2019. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
So I think we're going with that. But nice. It's going to be a great event. It's going to be cool. And in the evening, I love burlesque. I'm lucky to know some of the burlesque dancers in Berlin. And I contacted this girl. She's doing this like 1950s, like, I'm a sailor boy from da-da-da, in the first. And then her second act, she like literally does burlesque with fire.
Wow.
It's all, she like spits it out of her mouth and she rubs. It's awesome. And I love burlesque. I did a show once called Naked Poetry, which is poetry and burlesque mixed, and it was the best show. It was packed. Just everyone just had a great night. So I thought I'd do it again. So anyway, that's plug done.
Cool. So what else do you have in your notes here? Anything? Mention the book.
Mention the book.
We already did that. I did that. I think it was me.
So all of it is actually now about you. It says podcast live from the festival, interview all the performers, acts, musicians, broadcast live, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Do all-day podcasts and the radio show with writers that can pop in and talk to you and all that kind of thing. So it was all basically for you.
Yeah, that's
I thought it would be a really nice idea to have this kind of thing here.
Yeah.
You know, because you could fill up, you could do five or six live podcasts 1 hour after another, you know, and you could really get some material and really interesting people. So
That'd be something like I've never done before. Yeah.
That'd be cool, huh?
Yeah.
See?
Sounds like a good opportunity.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
This is your inner side.
Shit, that's wild, man.
It's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah, May 4th of May.
May 4th. The 4th of May. It's the Forum Factory. It's in Mitte.
So where is the info on WordFest? Is there a website?
It's coming. No, we're actually doing it now. Okay. We're in the process. We're actually getting
so you
all
can
that
just
stuff.
Send that to me later and I'll put that into
that's
the...
That's absolutely great. We're setting all that stuff up now. I'm working with a few different people and we're getting everything done. We're working out the lineup and we've already got, as I said, the burlesque is already booked. It's this fight. This girl does this feisty thing. She's very funny, and we've got a couple of great poets. I'm going to perform too. And in the day, as I said, we've got the talks and blah blah blah. That's enough promotion. Mm. Come on, let's talk about tits.
No, I mean we can talk about that. It's not really on topic. I mean, unless you consider tits to be artistic, which
they can be.
I guess they are. Yeah, yeah. Genetics and stuff like that. Biology. No, I think.
Are we done?
I think I'm trying to think of a
good out.
Yeah, good out. I guess.
What else is coming next for me? Maybe.
Maybe. Or if you can say in. No. See, I was. If you could say in one word.
Okay, ask me a complete. Word. Right, ask me a completely random question. That's got nothing to do with anything.
What kind of sandwiches do you like?
Oh, that's a good question. Cheese and pickle, actually. Shit. Cheese and tomato as well is very, very nice with pepper. Yeah. But cheese and pickle. Shit. I like tuna and onion as well.
That's amazing. And I think you taught me something about being an interviewer. I really appreciate you being here, man.
Hey, it was fun.
That was amazing.
It was
that
really fun.
Last piece that you just said right there, people probably don't even realize, but I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
The very, very amazing, the random question.
Nice.
I love it. Thank you so much for being here, Robert.
Pound it.
Robert Grant.
Hey, nice. Thank you so much.
Voices from the Dark, people.
Hey.
Later.